Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Well, you can forget any new stimulus. Trump tables the idea in Congress, saying, after I get reelected, building trades leaders speaking out, aviation leaders devastated. And today on the show, uncovering child labor on the high seas and the latest from the United Labor Agency. Good afternoon and welcome to the Wednesday, October 7th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. And when you get a chance, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis. Give us a rating eventually. 5 stars would be very much appreciated. You can also check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. We have two guests on the show today. Andy Shen will be joining us. He's been on several times. He is the Senior Oceans Advisor at Greenpeace, a international human rights and labor lawyer with extensive work on labor issues, primarily dealing with the global fishing industry. And he's got some good news to share with us. For the first time, and this just happened about a week ago, the U.S. Department of Labor has included Taiwan-caught fish in its list of goods produced by child labor or forced labor. The list of goods is widely considered one of the most authoritative sources on the state of forced labor. And the Labor Department's findings influence the sourcing decisions and human rights plans of many American companies. Bumblebee, for one. Bumblebee tuna. And we've talked about this on previous shows. Fish imported from vessels from Taiwan, the second largest distant water fleet in the world. And that fish is sold in supermarkets, cafeterias, restaurants all around the country. So this is significant. And that just shows you the pressure is having an effect, a very positive effect. Child labor and forced labor. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And it's been going on, my gosh, literally for centuries. David Meganhart will be joining us later in the show. Dave is executive director of the United Labor Agency, ulagency.org, one of the proud sponsors of this show. And he's going to run down some new training opportunities and more online virtual job fairs. You're seeing many of these job fairs going virtual because you just can't do it in the middle of a pandemic. And apparently the last one they did was very, very successful. And not only that, you bring more people to the table from outside the municipality that you're working in. So you get some pretty good talent on a virtual job fair. Also coming up, every year they honor the unsung heroes, and I've had the opportunity probably for the last 7 or 8 years to MC that event. And my guess, that's going virtual too. We'll find out when we bring Dave to the broadcast later in the show. Dave Meganhart, Executive Director of the United Labor Agency. Well, we had some big news, shocking news, that came out of the White House yesterday. President Trump called an abrupt end to negotiations with Democrats over additional COVID-19 relief, delaying action until after the election, despite a number of warnings from his own Federal Reserve chairman about the economy and how it's going in the tank. Trump tweeted that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was not negotiating in good faith and said he asked Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, to direct all his focus before the election into confirming his U.S. Supreme Court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett. How about that? Supreme Court more important than workers. This is a quote. I have instructed my representatives to stop negotiating until after the election. When? Immediately after I win, we will pass a major stimulus bill that focuses on hardworking Americans and small business. The turn could be a blow to Trump's reelection prospects and comes as his administration and campaign are in turmoil. This is according to a report in today's Associated Press. You know, Trump is quarantined. And the latest economic figures that have been coming out, we still have millions and millions of people that are jobless. Many of them will never find work in their respective field. I mean, the positions they had are gone and are not coming back. Trump's move came immediately after he spoke with top GOP leaders in Congress who had been watching talks between the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and Pelosi. Many Senate Republicans signaled they would not be willing to go along with any stimulus legislation that topped $1 trillion. Now, the latest was that the Democrats offered $2.2 trillion, and apparently the White House said it was backing a $400 per week pandemic jobless benefit. All this was in discussion. I mean, it was going back and forth and back and forth, and then all of a sudden yesterday, Trump said, no, not going to happen. Wait till after the election. And then when he gets reelected, it's all going to happen. Well, this has prompted a number of vicious comments. I'm going to start off with Sean McGarvey, president of the Building Trades, North America Building Trades Union, better known as NABTU. This is what he said. I'm appalled at President Trump's decision to walk away from negotiations at the expense of already struggling, hardworking Americans just trying to make ends meet during the pandemic. This is a breathtaking failure of leadership by the self-proclaimed deal maker, and a revealing display of priorities for him and his Republican allies. After months of dithering, division, posturing, and empty promises, they and the president have now decided to turn their backs on their struggling constituents, to shift sole attention to delivering for the only constituency that seems to matter to them, the well-financed elites who want to rush through a Supreme Court nominee. Sean goes on to say, we're in the midst of a pandemic that requires humility, cooperation, and true leadership. And by every measure, President Trump is failing our hardworking members in the construction industry, all frontline essential workers, and indeed the entire nation. He should immediately reverse course and convene negotiations until a deal is reached. Now, keep in mind, we have problems in the aviation industry because the funding that Congress appropriated back in the spring ran out last week. And we're talking aviation, Amtrak, bus drivers, anything that moves. Ray LaHood is a former Republican congressman who served as a transportation secretary under President Obama. He called this devastating. This is a quote. This is not the right time to be pulling the plug on negotiations. Some of these industries will take years to come back. Years to come back. We also have a comment from the Masters, Mates, and Pilots. Their president is Don Marcus. And they were working with both sides to come up with some relief for the maritime industry. And apparently, this is going to disrupt the supply chain for American troops overseas and keep the U.S. flag flying aboard merchant ships engaged in international trade. They really figured something was going to happen because now we're getting into national security and international security. But Trump, again, pulled the plug and said, no, not going to happen. You elect me, and then it'll happen. That's essentially what he said yesterday. Thousands of members of the Longshoremen, the ILA, are set to benefit from an amendment to the union's master contract with their employers at the United States Maritime Alliance, LTD. Harold Daggett is the president of the ILA, and he told members in a letter last week that those covered under the union's contract will not experience a loss of health care coverage because of any reduction in their 2020 work hours caused by COVID-19. How many times have I told you about the union difference on this show? You think that would happen if they didn't have a union? That's incredible. Got a comment here from Daggett. Your officers are grateful for our partners who recognize that the ILA workforce became America's heroic frontline workers during the pandemic, bravely and consistently keeping cargo moving in and out of our nation's ports. He went on to say healthcare coverage for our ILA workers covered under the National Healthcare Plan is an essential part of our master agreement. We are now assured that crucial benefits will continue in contract year 2021. By the way, the new contract year began last week, October 1st. Yeah, good move there. Good move there. The union difference. I always talk about it on the show. All right, we have to break. You're listening to America's Workforce. We'll talk about child labor on the high seas. That story coming up next, right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. You can check us out on Facebook. It's AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle. At AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one and welcome back to the show. Had him on several times over the past several months. Andy Shin is his name, and he is the Senior Oceans Advisor at Greenpeace, and he's an international human rights and labor lawyer. Perfect fit for America's workforce. Andy, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back.
Andy, I know you want to talk about child labor in the fishing industry, but just a little background to refresh our listeners on how you got involved in this line of work. So you were in law school out in California, and I guess part of your internship, you had to go to Cambodia. That's quite a challenge. Talk to me about that.
Sure. So it's actually adult forced labor in the fishing industry, but there have been some child labor in other parts of the seafood industry and in Southeast Asia. Basically, in 2010, I was a second year law student at Santa Clara University up in Northern California, and I was studying international criminal law and international human rights law, and I decided to go work at a UN tribunal in Cambodia that was, there were cases of war crimes and genocide during the Khmer Rouge period. And I was working for the prosecutor's office, helping prosecute some senior leadership of the Khmer Rouge at the time that were being accused of genocide against Vietnamese war crimes, just some horrific stuff. And I ended up falling in love with the country, Cambodia. And I, after I graduated in 2011, I went back. I worked for the court, and then I also ended up working for a small NGO in Cambodia that focused on providing legal aid to victims of trafficking, human trafficking, mm-hmm. and labor trafficking. And one of the cases I worked on happened to be one of the largest human trafficking cases in the modern history of Cambodia. It involved alleged trafficking of over 1,000 Cambodians into the Taiwanese fishing industry. And this is to remind the listeners, this was around 2012, 2011. And at that time, you know, globally in the Western world, there wasn't really any awareness that there was trafficking of this scale happening, connected to the supply chains, of the seafood entering into the U.S. and in the European markets.
Yeah, yeah. There's been a lot of attention to that subject, it seems, in recent years. Do you think we're making a dent because of the media attention on human trafficking? What's your thoughts?
I think it's definitely been a lot better than it was when I was out in Cambodia. And it was very much regional news. People were aware in Asia, but in the U.S., there was really no awareness. And since then, you know, a few years later, there was The Guardian, there was the AP, and then there was the New York Times series. And I think that really kind of brought a lot of attention to the public and really shocked a lot of people. And all, most importantly, or not most importantly, but very importantly, also to the businesses. The U.S. retailers and those that are buying the seafood from Asia, I mean, started to kind of really have no choice but to start to do more work on these issues. The unfortunate thing is that, you know, fast forward, you know, 6 years or so, and there really hasn't been a lot of progress being made. And that's what, you know, what we're trying to, you know, bring attention to, is that companies need to do a lot more. Our government needs to do a lot more to really end the complicity in human trafficking and forced labor in the fishing industry.
Well, it seems like the government of the United States is moving forward on one issue, and that's primarily goods produced by child labor or forced labor. And I'm reading that the Department of Labor has just included Taiwan-caught fish in its list of goods produced by child labor or forced labor. Give me some details on this. First of all, how did this happen? Is this, I guess, part of the answer would be the pressure that you pushed on, especially with the organization Greenpeace? Talk to me about that.
Absolutely. This is a huge deal. So this happened last Wednesday, September 30th. The Department of Labor, the International Labor Affairs Bureau, they every 2 years put out a report that lists countries and goods that are associated with forced labor. And it's important because it's actually a very high threshold. To get on this list, it can't just be a few isolated cases, but you have to really show that there's evidence, strong evidence, of numerous cases. And basically, they're making a finding that there's pervasive forced labor or child labor in these sectors around the world. And so we've been pushing, we've been engaging with Department of Labor for over a year. In June of last year, we approached them and asked them why Taiwan isn't on the list. And, you know, as some of your listeners know, Greenpeace has been working on forced labor in Taiwanese fishing industry for many years. There have been many media reports for quite a while. Yet in 2018, only Thailand and Indonesia were on the list for forced labor, despite, you know, numerous reports of other countries also having these problems. And so as part of our campaign to improve the conditions in the Taiwanese fleet, we pushed very hard for the inclusion of Taiwan on the list. We ended up writing a letter to the Department of Labor last December following one of the release of our reports, Seabound, by our Greenpeace Southeast Asia colleagues that documented a lot of forced labor in the Taiwanese fleet and the Chinese fleet as well. And we got a coalition of NGOs and trade unions, including the AFL-CIO, Human Rights Watch, some other major organizations, even some businesses such as Whole Foods decided to sign on, basically calling on the Department of Labor to add distant water fishing nations to their report and to not exclude any seafood that's harvested on the high seas in international waters from their report. And so there was a bit of a exchange we had with the Department of Labor where they said there was a misunderstanding that, you know, we got some information that they previously excluded all seafood that was caught on the high seas. They only added seafood that was caught within the national waters of a country. And then they disputed that claim. They said that's not true. They you know, include all seafood. They don't exclude any seafood. As long as it's made with forced labor, it could end up on the list. And so we were waiting, and we provided more. We made a submission, you know, where we had numerous reports we cited. We made strong arguments earlier this year. And then so, you know, in last week, we really had no idea what was going to happen. We were very, very happy and pleased to see that, you know, that they very clearly made the decision that all seafood, regardless of where it's caught, if it was made with forced labor or child labor, it would be on the list. And then they put Taiwan, they put China on the list. So those are the first two nations they put on the list for forced labor and distant water fishing.
That had to be a surprise to you. I mean, considering what's been coming out of this Labor Department, they're not what you call worker-friendly, especially in the United States. But for them to do this, wow, that's all I got to say. Altogether, how long would you say you were working on this and to accomplish what happened last week, Andy?
Nearly a year and a half. But going back, we've been putting out reports since 2016, and we've been doing investigations on that fleet since 2014. So when you think about that, 6 years of reports and investigations we've been putting out, building up the evidence, saying that this is not an isolated case. This is like systemic forced labor happening in the industry. And, you know, we've been getting a lot of pushback. The Taiwanese government, some of the businesses have been saying, no, these are just isolated cases. It doesn't happen a lot. And we've been saying, no, there's a pattern here. And there's systemic forced labor. It needs to be recognized as such. And so we pushed a lot. And a lot of credit goes to our allies, like AFL-CIO showed up, Solidarity Center, ILRF, many organizations strong on labor and human rights showed up with us. And, you know, I think we really made a strong case as a coalition and, you know, as a group of organizations that really have expertise on these issues, where, you know, the evidence was there, the presence was there, and I think there was really no other possibility. And really, quite frankly, the rationale was there. You know, this mm-hmm. is something that it's under international law, where, you know, seafood that's harvested with forced labor is attributed on the high seas, is attributed to the flag state, which is the country where the fishing vessel is registered. And so this mm-hmm. is not disputable. So I think everything was quite clear, and it was just a matter of us you know, providing this information, providing the explanation and the arguments. And credit goes to ILAB, the International Labor Affairs Bureau, because they've done great work internationally on labor rights, at least. And in other sectors, they've made quite a dent. It just happened that on fishing and seafood, it was quite limited before. But right now, I feel like this really opens the door. The U.S. government, the Department of Labor, actually has a lot of credibility in its report compared to the State Department, which the TIP report is much more politicized. And so this report is much more credible in terms of its methodology. And, you know, I think businesses really look to the report in terms of saying, hey, this is a red flag for us in terms of our supply chain. This is something that we really need to act on. And I think now, considering Taiwan and China are huge importers of seafood into the U.S., I think this really puts the onus on U.S. businesses to do a lot more in their supply chain.
Well, one of those businesses is Bumblebee, and everybody knows Bumblebee tuna. Let's talk about that in the next segment. Can we do that? Do you have enough time to get into the nitty-gritty on this?
Absolutely. I would love to talk about Bumblebee.
All right. Andy Shen is his name. He is the Senior Oceans Advisor at Greenpeace. He's an international human rights and labor lawyer. Significant news for the first time. This happened just a week ago. The U.S. Department of Labor included Taiwan caught fish in its list of goods produced by child labor or forced labor. Also, later in the show, we have Dave Meganhart of the United Labor Agency. He's got a couple of things he's going to talk about regarding virtual job fairs, training, trying to get people back to work in the middle of a pandemic. Not an easy task, but he's doing it. And it's all happening on America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Area Labor Federation, part of the AFL-CIO, which is one of the many organizations that's been helping out Greenpeace. And we're talking with Andy Shen. Andy is a senior oceans advisor at Greenpeace. He's an international human rights and labor lawyer, talking about the Department of Labor just a week ago, including Taiwan caught fish in its list of goods produced by child labor or forced labor. So, Andy, let me ask you, how do I find out about this? And I'm wondering how many people actually look at that list. Now, let's start. Where do we go to find out what products, what food is produced by child labor? How do we do that?
I would just do a quick internet search. You type in DOL, list of goods, forced labor, and it will automatically pop up. It's on the Department of Labor website, International Labor Affairs Bureau. For those that use mobile apps, there's also actually an app they produce that's very handy and very easy to use. It's called Sweat and Toil. And so you can just find that on your app store for free download. And that app basically, it's an easy to use app that captures all the information in the report and makes it easy for consumers that are shopping to quickly look and search by good or by country. So, for example, if you want to look at fish, you can look in fish and then you can see which countries are listed for forced labor or child labor. And then there's other commodities and goods as well. So that's actually a very handy tool.
I'm wondering how many people actually do that. I personally check labels all the time, especially for food content, salt content, all those things. And I think I might have told you this story on the show. I love the fish tilapia. And one day I was shopping and I found some frozen tilapia on sale. I looked at the back and it was from China. Which kind of scared me a little bit especially with the way they farm raise fish in some of these countries. And I know China is a culprit. Taiwan is another one as well. But what they said on the label, it was carbon monoxide added for color. I'm like, wait a minute, that comes out of my tailpipe. I don't want it on the dinner that I'm going to eat. So immediately I put that package down and moved on to the next one. So I'm just wondering, that's me. What are you hearing? Are people doing this kind of thing out there?
I think that's an important process of just raising more awareness about where the fish comes from, but also, who made the fish, who caught the fish and under what conditions. And so, actually there are a lot of canned tuna brands now, and also frozen tuna sold in some stores where on the packaging, you can actually see the origin of the fish or the seafood. You can see where it was caught. And a lot of brands, like Bumblebee, they like to promote this and say, hey, look, we can be fully transparent and disclose the traceability, of the fish in terms of, where it was caught, so people can know whether, in what region of the ocean, whether it was a fish that was overfished, et cetera. But, what's lacking is that there's no such traceability or transparency on the labor conditions of the workers that caught the fish. So
right.
Even though you can know, which country, what flag of the vessel caught the fish, perhaps even, in what gear was being used, in what part of the ocean, you have no clue, was it a Filipino or Indonesian who caught the fish? Were they being charged recruitment fees? Were they at risk of debt bondage? Were they working 20 hours a day? None of this information is available to the consumer.
You know, when it comes to child labor, how young are the kids that you're, I'm sure there's been several reports that came out over the years. What ages are we talking about, Andy?
So for child labor, we haven't been finding that in the Taiwanese tuna fleet. That's been more, there were some stories that came out of Thailand a few years ago of child labor being used in the shrimp peeling facilities of the prawns that are being sold in many of the American supermarkets. That's a different story. And those kids were pretty young. Yeah.
I've been hearing all kind of horror stories. So we're talking big retailers here, Walmart, Costco, and major brands like Bumblebee. You and I have had conversation about Bumblebee as far as illegal fishing, overfishing. Where are we with all that right now? Is the pressure still on? And what's their response to all of this?
So we launched an online petition for the public, and hopefully the listeners can go online. I can give you the link right now. It's greenpeace.org/USA/Bumblebee petition, one word. And on there, we have a petition to the CEO of Bumblebee calling on her to take some leadership and Bumblebee to take four immediate steps to really address forced labor and other human rights abuses in global seafood supply chains. And so this was in August. And just a week later, the U.S. Customs announced a withhold release order, basically blocking all seafood harvested from a fishing vessel that's Taiwanese-owned, the flag to a tiny Pacific nation called Vanuatu. And this vessel, we've confirmed, supplied FCF, which is the corporate owner of Bumblebee, in 2019. So there's a link between this fishing vessel and the corporate owner, who is the major supplier of Bumblebee. So there's a high risk that forced labor produced seafood could have entered into the U.S. through Bumblebee, as possible. Now we've been in negotiations with FCF. My colleagues in Taiwan have been. We've been disappointed. We've been giving them very strong recommendations, very practical, reasonable recommendations. If they're serious about ending forced labor in their supply chain, these are the steps that they need to take. And yet, we haven't received any positive news yet. We've been waiting to see what they're going to do, if they're committed to ending these horrible abuses. And we haven't here, and Bumblebee has been saying they defer to their corporate owner. Okay, we understand, but Bumblebee is the American brand. It's a public-facing brand sold in supermarkets everywhere. And we feel that they have some responsibility to convey to their corporate owner in Taiwan that this is not acceptable, that they need to do much more if they want to assure customers that the seafood they sell is not produced by forced labor.
All right. So the pressure will stay on. I see that website you're talking about here. It's greenpeace.org/USA/Bumblebee petition. That's a mouthful. I'm sure it's all linked to your website, too. It's greenpeace.org/USA. And the Twitter handle for your organization is at GreenpeaceUSA. Lots of URLs there, lots of information. And it's important that all of us take part in this and try to do what we can to put an end to this. What's going on is illegal. It's illegal and it's immoral and unethical. I mean, it's all those things in one. Andy, you're a great guest. Thank you so much for what you bring to the table. And let's keep in touch on this subject, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. And please keep stay tuned. And there's a lot of information that will come out soon again.
All right. We'll keep a focus on that website. Andy Shen, Senior Oceans Advisor at Greenpeace. All right. We're going to take a break. Dave Meginhart heads the United Labor Agency. He's coming up next right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action La Una, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word La Una to the number 69866. Through the La Una Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms. Let's see, we've got Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. Also on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, Twitter handle, same thing, at AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to Dave Meginhardt, I got a comment here from Rich Trumka. As you know, the Supreme Court's new term opened on Monday, and Rich, who is the president of the AFL-CIO, said public attention will be focused on the furious and hypocritical effort of Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell to ram through Judge Amy Coney Barrett as a replacement for the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg before the voters remove both Trump and McConnell from power. He's being very optimistic here. The Senate Republican majority's willingness to turn somersaults to distinguish this situation from the rationale that they used to deny President Obama's court nominee a vote or even a hearing 8 months prior to the 2016 election is motivated in large part by their perception that Chief Justice John Roberts is not a reliable conservative vote. And then Rich said, wait a minute. Roberts remains reliably hardline in the most fundamental issue facing our democracy, the growing imbalance of economic and political power. If he gains yet another conservative colleague, the Roberts Court may become the most dangerous branch of government. While Roberts has taken great pains to maintain public confidence in an era of intense partisan polarization by not allowing the justices to continuously split 5-4 along party lines, he's actually one of the foremost guardians of the corporate class in the history of the court. As such, he is actively working against the very social balance he sometimes appears to be going forward and consistently voting in a way that compounds inequality of income, opportunity, and power, putting our democracy on a trajectory to implosion. Wow! Powerful words from the head of the Labor Federation, Rich Trumka. I'm still waiting for his comment on what Trump did yesterday, saying that he's not going to issue any stimulus to American workers until after he is reelected. After that, everything's going to change. Let's go to our live line right now and welcome back to the show, Dave Meginhardt. Dave is the head of the United Labor Agency. I always say they try to connect people with work, and that's not an easy task, especially during a pandemic. Hey, Dave, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
No, it's always great to be here. You know.
So what's your thoughts? Before, I know you got a lot to talk about, but I figure coming from you, the president is kind of dangling this, this obviously stimulus checks, unemployment compensation, saying, hey, if you elect me, you're going to get all this. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dave. Wouldn't you call that extortion?
I would call it extortion. I would call it also a crisis in leadership. For somebody to obviously pin his reelection hopes above the needs of working families and the country I think we've lost words to try to describe the behavior of this president when he plays with people's lives in this manner. The pain is real on the streets. People are suffering. It's odd because, you know, there's two economies going on here. So a lot of the press, you know, you get a lot of press about how people, you know, the stock market's been doing well up until yesterday when he made those comments. Absolutely. If you just go back, you know, when you have an economist like Jerome Powell saying that more fiscal stimulus is needed, it is essential to try to help with the recovery. You know, it's very much in the manner of the Trump administration not listening to experts in the medical field and about masks or about how the virus is spread. There's a disdain for the people that know what they're talking about and what the experts are talking about. So if your top economist says that this is a critical point of the economy, that if there isn't an intervention by the legislature to put a stimulus in, that it could derail any hope of a clean and robust, you know, sort of recovery, you listen. You have to listen. You have to get the deal done. You have to make the otherwise, this is going to be another month lost, right? And mm-hmm. then the damage grows, and people, you know, lose their homes, or they get kicked out of their apartments, or they go hungry. Their children are destabilized in their school. I mean, this has real impact, and it's very, you know, frustrating is a word, I guess, you could use on radio that say, you know, that it's frustrating that, like, this is where we are in the debate. It's not about, like, hey, what's the best way to do this? You know, you could take the debate between Republicans and Democrats saying this is how we think this would work or this would work. But when you fundamentally don't agree that it's needed or that you want to play with it in this manner, I find it irresponsible. I just find it that you can't believe the headline. I think that, you know, that is going to not play well across the country. I think people know what, you know, that there's a whole segment of the economy that has been devastated, and people need help. That's just the truth of it. So
yeah, and you see that. You see that every day, Dave. I mean,
every day.
Yeah, yeah. You're in the employment field here. You're trying to connect those people. You're right. Seeing the herd out there, and apparently, this guy does not. That's the sad part about that. Speaking of that, talk to me about. And I guess you had some success with the virtual job fairs last time you do it. It sounded pretty exciting.
Yeah. So we're doing virtual job fairs every month. We started in June. We had a giant one in June. We have one in July. We've had one in September. And from every month going forward, we'll have a virtual job fair. We haven't had less than 50 employers in any of them. You know, we had the first one, it was almost 90 employers. And they're a whole range of jobs, right? And I think that for the people that are looking for work, they're listening to this show, you know, you have to get used to this tool. You have to get used to looking for work in a new way because, you know, the days of like doing mass recruitments or having big, assemblies is past right now, right? So a lot of this is moving online. So you have to get adept at it, and you have to be skilled about it. And we, you know, we lead you through it. We will help people how to navigate it, how to talk to employers, how to get the most out of it. And the cool thing about it is that it really is, it's a lot better than an in-person job fair, because if you have 50 employers in an in-person job fair, like the Q or Cleveland State or something, it's massive and it's chaotic. And you try to talk to the, you know, people, and you're trying to get to the booth, and you're talking publicly, and you know, there's only so many people you can talk to. This generally they're over 2 days, and you can sort of select who you want to talk to. It's kind of very calm, you know, and you can pick your targets. You can chat with them. You can apply for a job right there. You know, generally it's like integrated where you talk to the person, you could apply for the job right away. So as we're going through this and we're learning, you know, we're getting better at it, it's becoming a lot more streamlined. It just is a really efficient way to talk to a lot of employers in a very short period of time. So that's good. You know, we always try to, tell people, you know, we try to give advice is like, you know, you know, looking for a job is like a job, right? You have to be dedicated to it, and you have to talk to as many employers as possible, because law of averages, like, you're going to find the right fit for you. You're going to find the company that wants you, but you're also going to want, you're going to find the company that you want to be at. But you have to, you know, you have to do that research, and this helps to like make that happen in a more efficient way. So, right. So, I mean, we're going to have one coming up at the end of the month. We're also going to be having, partnering with Jobs Ohio, which is the development arm of State of Ohio, you know, that they have put on, they want to put on another virtual job fair. So actually in October, we're going to have two. So next week, the end of next week, there's going to be one that's sponsored by Jobs Ohio that we're publicizing now. And all of this you can find through Facebook. So I'm not going to give a bunch of website names and all that stuff, but Facebook, you know, Google, Ohio Jobs, Cleveland, Cuyahoga, or United Labor Agency, you'll find all this information out there. And so, because we have a lot. I mean, I think that given that pain and given the fact that, like, you know, what we're seeing is the WARN notices, and a WARN notice is what a company has to do to warn people that they're going to be laid off, right? So it's usually a 60-day notice. And in the spring, a lot of the notices were like, this is a temporary layoff due to COVID. So as time has gone on, you can see that the bankruptcies occurred, the cost cuttings occurred, and those temporary layoffs are turning into permanent layoffs. So like there's a second one, there's a second notice that comes out saying, yeah, okay, we're converting this layoff into a permanent. So you can see that like the restructuring has begun. And, you know, people waited because look, I have a job I love, right? So if I was furloughed or if I was temporarily laid off, I would probably wait, you know, and say, well, what's going to happen? You know, I want to go back to that job. I have friends there. I do good work. I've worked there for a number of years. I like the money, you know. And, you know, so then over the summer, people waited. And now the truth is coming to them, and now they're going to have to look for work. And it's difficult. It's psychologically difficult. You know, there's a lot of stuff in the press that kind of drives me crazy a little bit, that, you know, saying that, oh, the $600 money that the federal government, you know, the additional unemployment, that stopped people from looking for work. A couple things about that. I don't think that's ever true. I don't think it's never true. And the other thing is that if $600 a week stops somebody from looking for work, then we may want to look at the wages in our country, right? That maybe the wages in our country are too low, right? So if it's, you know, if that's a deterrent and you make more money at $600 a week, then, you know, there's got to be a reckoning about what we're paying our workers to. So I don't see that, you know, it isn't that people are lazy. It isn't that people, you know, don't want to work, all that reactionary talk. What it is, you know, is that it's hard to find work. There's a big restructuring, and there was a lot of uncertainty. There's a ton of uncertainty in this economy. It's still unclear. It's very unclear what's happening on a day-to-day basis, you know, with what.
No, I know.
You know, so.
Yeah. We're talking years.
People find themselves, you know. Yeah, years.
We're talking years to recover from what we're going through right now. There's no question. Now, you do some training because there's going to be some jobs that are going to require certain skills. Where are we with that, Dave?
Right. Well, we have a lot. The good thing is that the government, at least parts of the government, have noticed that this is a need, and we have more money now for training than we've had in a long time. We have new training opportunities. Again, we've partnered with Jobs Ohio. They've helped to offset some of the costs. So something like a programming boot camp. So if you have any like digital or computer aptitude or something that you want to get into, we have been sponsoring a training for organization called Tech Elevator. Generally, it's a very expensive course, and but with our grants and some money from Jobs Ohio, you can go to this training for free. And it's a good skill to have, right? I mean, this is a, you know, obviously even with the online world now, in the virtual world, there's even more need for people who know programming and who can work in the computer field. So that's a great opportunity. That's happening. We're doing a lot of publicity for that, because that's going to be starting soon, and there may be another class that comes up. So again, go to the websites, go to Facebook, go to Twitter and Instagram, whatever you use. Look up Ohio Means Jobs, Cleveland Cuyahoga, or United Labor Agency, and you'll be able to find this information. Now, what's been encouraging is that we've seen a huge uptick in people that are looking for training and are using this time, this pause, to upskill. And I think that's super important for people,
right,
to be able to, you know, be ready for when the economy does come back. So if you're not finding the work that you want, if you're not happy with the wages that you're being offered, you know, invest in yourself and use it. So there's a lot of relaxed requirements that have been employed right now, so that we can get more people trained, and this would be the time to do it. And just encourage people, if that's something that they feel like they do want to do, this would be the time to do it, you know, to be able to be ready when the economy does creep back into life.
Yeah, and the nice thing about this, you can do it right from your computer. That's
exactly
the beauty of it. All right, we just have a couple of minutes left here, and every year you do the Unsung Heroes of the Labor Movement, and I have had the honor to emcee that event for probably 7 or 8 years now, and that, I take it, is going to be virtual this year? Is that the case?
So we're obviously, we do a fundraiser in the fall of every year. We've decided to not do that and not put people at risk. So, but we really love the idea, right? And I think that even if at this time in our history, essential workers have come to the forefront, and people, you know, have, of course, there's a more appreciation for the people that, you know, have put themselves on the front line. So this would not be the time for us to not do something to honor the unsung heroes of the labor movement. So what we figured out is that we did a nomination process like we always would do. So instead of honoring them at a dinner, we've put together tribute videos. And what will happen is, again, on the ULA website, on the ULA social media channels, and then all throughout the labor movement too, through the unions, we'll be spreading those out to show, you know, the stories about what people have gone through, how they've helped their union, how they've helped working people, how, you know, the stories that, you know, are people that again would never be told, right? That's the whole idea of a fun hero, that, you know. And so they're starting to come out. They're great. They're inspiring, as always. And the nice thing is that with the videotape, there's a chance that more people will see them than just at a fundraising dinner. So obviously we'll do this in the future, because this will live on. We'll have it on the ULA's YouTube channel, where people can go see them. Members of the union can see them, the person's from. And so we're really excited about it, because it's just this opportunity to tell stories that don't get told. And that's one of our purposes, you know, to really shine a light on the great work that working people do, that union members do, and how important they are to the country and our communities and our neighborhoods, and the bedrock of what everything that the country's about. And it's just inspiring to listen to them.
And they do it every day, and they're doing it in the middle of a pandemic. So my hat's off to all of the unsung heroes. All right, ulagency.org. That's the main website, ulagency.org. They're on Facebook, facebook.com/United Labor Agency. You can check them out there. Lots of information. Dave, you take care. Be safe. We'll be talking to you in 2 months, all right?
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we have the United Auto Workers, and we have a coup, the president of the NFL Players Association. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.